listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World, right here on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happiness. Our number, if you want to give us a call tonight, is 562-912-3444. You can always email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Once again, if you want to give us a call, that number is 562-912-3444. Now just sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World on the new Talk Story Radio Network. And welcome to another edition of Swoop's World Primetime, Thursday, November 15th, 2012. What's happening, Peter?
Not a whole lot, just hanging out. I like this change of weather we've had, though.
It is nice.
It suits my style.
It is nice. And we had a great show last night, man. Last night on Swoop's World Late Night, we had Jose Serna from Panther Heart here. What a good time with him, man.
Yeah, he was funny, interesting guest, and, you know, as we've seen in the past, he's a really good musician. So.
Yeah, exactly.
That went well. That was good.
It's always good. And then they got a new project coming out, and they're going to be playing, I think he said, Friday night, here in Long Beach on Pine Avenue at one of the galleries there, but you can check it out at pantherheart.com. So get a chance to check that out, and right there, we're linked to it from SwoopsWorld.com, so if you're on SwoopsWorld.com, just look at last night's show, which is in the archives now, and you can pull that up. And another quick announcement, the Swoop's World Android app is now available in the Android store. So not only do we have the iPhone app out there, we have the Android app out there, too.
Very nice. We're reaching the world. Spreading the word through technology.
Through technology, man. We're living large, man. So anyway, chat room is acting weird. Is yours good? You're doing okay? All right, we're good. We're going to be talking about all things bikes today, man. So that's always fun. Yeah. As many know, you're out rewriting the Long Beach Bikeways, and
yep.
And give us an update on what's happening with that.
Well, with Monday being a holiday, I didn't get my ride in like I normally would, so I'm a little behind. But the next ride is I just recently covered the route Bikeway 7, yeah. Long Beach Bikeway 7, and that's essentially the Long Beach, the LA River. So, and that's for anybody who's ever, who's never been there. That's a great fun ride. It's the section that runs through Long Beach was about 8+ miles, and that was all, car free and well maintained pavements and lots of paint on there. So everybody knows where they're supposed to be. It's a really nice ride, and as I mentioned in the past, it's not necessarily the prettiest ride. It's a little urban and kind of that urban jungle feel, but
yeah.
I like that. So, and then it drops you off if you're heading south on it. It drops you off right in the Rainbow Harbor, underneath the Queensway Bridge, Catalina Landing, all that. So, some cool stuff down there as far as you got the aquarium and lots of places to eat or picnic. Lots of great picnics, and then you could ride over the bridge and head over to Queen Mary itself, if you like. So there's lots of cool things to do on a bike or in that area. And then coming up will be the next one, because I haven't been able to find a Route 9, is Route 10, which I think I mentioned that last night. That's a route that when I was first reviewing these, I got lost on. And again, not that I got lost in Long Beach. I got lost trying to follow the directions because the signs just ended and they weren't clear. And I have since discovered that the main problem was that I was doing those routes. I was reviewing that route before all the signage had gone up. So now that one runs basically from like Atherton, for those of you who are familiar with Long Beach, Atherton area next to the college, next to Cal State Long Beach. It runs along there through a bike path that goes through the condos and stuff like that, and then comes out there on Loins, and from there goes through some more condos and around the Marine Stadium. which then eventually will it carries you all the way to like the 1st and 2nd Street, which will then all the way over to 3rd and Broadway to the bike, what do you call them? The bike lanes,
I guess.
Bike lanes. The bike highway sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, the so
the
for
streets that have the...
Yeah, so for those of you who are familiar or not familiar, either way, that Long Beach has certain two streets that have bike lanes that are separate. They have their own bike. They have their own signals, light signals, so you know when to go, when to stop, and it's all painted green, and it's separate from cars. So anyhow, that's Route 10. So that should be a really fun ride, because I've ridden all of that, but never as the Route 10.
Right.
So so yeah, that'll be coming up. That'll be the next one. So so yeah, having fun, just getting reviewing all the rides.
Cool. Very, very cool. well, we have a couple things we're going to talk about, but before we get into that, let's take our first break. And before our first break, let's mention your book.
Oh yeah. So you got the book. Usually I have a copy to show you, but I don't have it at hand here. It's Where to Bike, Orange County, and it's part of a series. There's a number of those out there, about 10 altogether in the U.S., and Where to Bike Orange County covers, just as the title indicates, all the best routes, recreational rides, most of these are. There's some that are more, you know, training rides, but most of them are recreational rides, varying from the super easy 3 or 4 miles to, like, say, Irvine Park to, you know, 45-mile, lots of hills and climbs along, say, the Santa Ana River. So gives you places, gives you very accurate maps and a ride log, as well as places to eat along the way or stop, like pleasant places to stop, get water. Bike shops are all, the maps are very detailed, all set up with a GPS unit. And so, or they were mapped with a GPS unit. So anyhow, it's and it can be bought at your local bike shop in Orange County. In fact, if you go to wheretobikeorangecounty.com, I think it is. It will show you which bike shops are actually carrying it. I just discovered that. And and then, of course, you can always get it off of Amazon.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, we'll take a quick break, come on back, and we'll be talking all things bikes. You're listening to Swoop Show on the Talk Story Radio Network. If you got a question, you can jump in our chat room, type your question in, and I'm sure Peter will be happy to answer it. Until then, we're going to listen to a little Acidic, and we'll be back in a minute.
I'm dying from these doses, it's psychosis and remarkably untame. But it sits in every image, thundering while I'm convulsing under skin. But face down in the sand, set on fire the helping hands. See.
This year, firefighters like Fire Chief James Hall will battle wildfires around the country in hopes of containing them. But firefighters can't do it alone.
A single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel more than a mile, or it can ignite and destroy your home and community.
Get fire adapted. Learn simple steps you can take now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Hey, this is Sharp Mo on the wall, and you're listening to Soup's World.
And welcome back to Swoosh World Talk Story Radio Network. We're always interactive, live, and archive. And you can always like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can download all of our past shows from either swooshworld.com or iTunes for free. And we're here talking all things bikes. Now, Peter, one of the questions we received over the last week directed towards you are, how does one go about choosing a bike? And I kind of have an idea. It depends on what kind of riding they plan on doing, but how would you tell somebody to go about?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing you got to figure out, is because, you know, like anything, bike salesmen are salesmen. You got to take the bike part of it out of it, they're salesmen. So if you don't know what you need or want, someone will sell you something.
Right.
So, and again, the good ones are people who are going to try to get your business long term and all that, and they're going to steer you right. But as we know, that doesn't always happen. So the first thing you got to know is what you're doing. What are you commuting 3 miles to work every day? Do you want to go down to the beach and ride along the boardwalk and bring a picnic lunch? You know, those are can be two different bikes.
Right.
Have you reached a point where, like, okay, you've been riding the cruiser on the beach, boardwalk, and now you are ready to, you know, start going 10 miles, 20 miles, because you're going to go, you know, you're training now.
Yeah.
And so you got to know, because there are vastly different bikes. And again, there was a time where there was, you know, three basic kinds of bike. You had a 10-speed, you had some sort of a mountain type of bike, and you had a cruiser.
Yeah.
That was it. That was it. You know, now it's not true. I mean, they've got commuter bikes for city people. They got commuter bikes for people who are, you know, commuting over, say, like, more bouncy, dirt, hard-packed trails. And then you've got people that are, you got bikes that are somewhere in between all that. You have bikes for those who don't want to sitting up. So you've got recumbents, you know, because their backs make that uncomfortable because they've had some sort of surgery. So that's the first thing. Is figure out what kind of bike you want. And then the next thing, before you even walk in there, figure out how much you really want to spend. Like, don't figure, oh, I want a bike for $300. Figure, I can spend up to.
Right.
And make that number as realistic as possible, because otherwise you'd be in a world of hurt. Next thing you walk out of there with $3,000 spent, because it all looks shiny and new and it's exciting, and then you get the buyer's remorse, and then, you know, so again, know your budget, know what type, at least general bike, and then, you know, you will always get better deals at those big stores, you know, so that's something to consider, but you'll almost always get better service at those little stores.
Right.
So you gotta, you know, how you feel about that, you know? So I've done both. I've bought from the big stores when money was tight and I needed a certain kind of bike and I only had a certain amount of money. And then I bought the nicer, different type of bike when I had more money from the little guy. And you get way better service.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing you gotta figure. And once you go from there, it becomes a whole lot easier. You know, your commuters are certain types of bikes. And the thing you got to know is that a lot of the bike industry is driven, or has been driven, and this is slowly changing, around the bike racer.
Yeah.
You know, so they're going to want to sell you, you know, skinny seats, everything, tell you how important light is, you know, and really, in the grand scheme of things, if it's so heavy that you can't move it, then it's too heavy, obviously. But really, unless you're riding really long distances or you're racing, lightness really doesn't matter. You know, they talk about, I have a frame that was on one of my bikes that weighs 2.4 pounds or something like that. At the time, this is like a 25-year-old bike now. At the time, it was the lightest bike by like 2 pounds or 3 pounds, which sounds like a lot. So you got a bike that's half the weight.
Right.
You don't have a bike that's half the weight. You have a frame that's half the weight. When you add the tires and the gears and everything else, that frame weight is a very small percentage of the total bike.
Yeah.
Then when you add the engine, if you weigh, as I do, about 200 pounds, what's 2 pounds one way or another? It really doesn't make... Now, from a cost point of view, you could be talking about $1,000 difference
right.
between a two-pound bike, a bike that weighs, you know, say 18 pounds, and a bike that weighs 20 pounds. $1,000 difference, maybe more.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're talking carbon fiber. You could be talking $5,000 difference. Do you need that? Is it going to make any difference? Again, if you're racing, it's going to make a difference. If you're not racing and you have the money and you just want to spend it, then by all means, go for it.
Knock yourself out, right?
You know, don't let them fool you like this is a much lighter bike. You know, a bike that weighs, say, 20 pounds and a bike that weighs 35 pounds, you're going to notice the difference.
Right.
So that's a big... A bike that weighs 20 pounds and 22 pounds or 24 pounds, you're not going to notice the difference, especially if you're someone that's just getting into the sport. You definitely won't notice the difference. And then if you're let's say, you're getting into the sport because you're overweight and you want to lose weight...
You have to get the heavier bike anyway.
Yeah, you want to get the heavier, more durable ride. Yeah. So it just depends what you do. But don't let them scare you into, oh, this is only this is only 12 ounces versus that one over there that's 10 ounces and blah, blah, blah. Don't get caught up in that. Unless you're racing.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I was listening to a show with – it's a triathlon-based show. And one of the questions was the guy wrote it, you know, talked about – you know, should I get this frame? You know, this frame is so many point, you know, percentages of a pound lighter than the one I'm currently riding. And the guy laughed and he says, you know, we get these questions all the time. Sometimes the problem is you just need to lose 10 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, for, you know, you're talking about that time, that, you know, the time he's turning in on his races. He says, you know, sometimes it's not like you said, the minute little amount of the frame. Sometimes you're carrying too much weight.
It's really elite athletes that can tell that difference and where that difference makes adds up. And yeah, you look at time trials or you look at like a Tour de France type of thing, every extra pound you're carrying, they've calculated, is X amount more friction resistance, which results in X amount more calories burned or energy spent, which then all translate to 3 or 4 seconds maybe.
Right.
And in a race that's decided by 3 or 4 seconds or 10 seconds, that's a big deal. If you're commuting to work... that doesn't make any difference. You know?
You leave 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah. And if you don't like your job, then you probably don't want to get there any faster than necessary anyhow. So, you know, don't get fooled into that. Now, again, cool bikes are very cool mechanical stuff, and they always come out with new gadgets, and sometimes it's just fun to own that stuff. Yeah. So, and if you want to own it, just to own it, but don't let somebody tell you you got to have all this. The things you got to have is a bike that gets you to where you want to go, that's comfortable for you, and then make sure you have the right gear to go with it. You know, if you're commuting and you carry books, don't get a backpack. No. You know, if you can, hopefully afford it, get the panniers. You know, the side bags that sit on there, so that, because you'll be less sweaty. It's way more comfortable to ride. Books on your back shift around, throw you off balance, results in crashes. Get the right gear, and like a lot of times they'll have a, you know, they'll have a bike out there that already comes with like baskets, ready to go. All's part of the price, you know. So get the bike that fits what you want to do.
And you know that being said, some of the panniers that they have these days, or saddlebags, or however they want to call them, they're designed that once you get to your destination, you can throw it over your shoulder.
Yeah,
and so,
pick it up and walk away. Yeah. So again, that's another thing. No way you're getting somewhere, and when you get there, you need to be able to carry it, lug it. You know, if you're getting it because you want to be able to shop with it, you know, get a front basket.
Yeah.
Get looking to maybe getting a trailer. You know, I mean, there's something out there for every type of riding. Don't let them tell you you need to get this because you'll go faster and it's lighter. And
you know, one of the questions I would think that our the person who asked about this might have is, you know, I do like riding a beach cruiser along the bike, but I want to also be able to ride my bike to work, and the beach cruiser is just not going to accommodate. So are we talking that they should get two bikes or a hybrid or?
Well, now that's that a lot of that goes to how much money you have and how much space you have, because bikes start taking up space. If you've got the money and you have the interest, get two bikes. But there are bikes out there that are hybrids that will allow you to, because presumably if you want a cruiser, it's because you want to sit up higher and you want a more comfortable, relaxed ride. There are a lot of those types of bikes out there, like the Townies are a good example of bikes that are allow you to really sit up, but have plenty of gears, so now you're in a headwind. You know, I wouldn't probably go commuting more than, say, 10 miles on them. Then I'd want something a little, but so you got to know what you're doing with it. But yeah, there are definitely bikes that can do both,
right,
and that they're more geared for the comfort and not the speed, and that they do get a little heavier. But again, you want to cruise down the beach. You're not trying to race down the beach, you know. If you're now on the other hand, if you're a racer, you know this is your training. This is what you want to do. You want to go as fast as possible. Get a road bike. Get a a racer type of bike.
Right.
But knowing what you want, there's something that will work for both. I mean, I love the idea of owning a different bike for every purpose.
Yeah.
My wife doesn't love that idea as much as I love that idea.
You know, when people go out and buy a bike, especially the novice, which I think over the years I've actually learned more, but because it's like a car. You kind of go in, you kind of pick out what you want, and they throw you a couple options, but whatever, you walk away with the dealer design. With bikes though, it seems like as soon as you get the bike home, you realize this seat doesn't really work, or
right,
these pedals don't really work. So there's a lot of changing out and kind of making that thing form to just you. What does a person do? How does a person go about determining what saddle is best for them?
Well, there's a couple things. You know, anywhere where your body touches the bike are the important parts as far as comfort goes. So that basically means your ass, your feet, and your hands,
yeah,
right? And so, starting with saddles, bike seats, the thing there is, as a rule, you'd rather be a little bit harder than softer. And the reason for that is soft means, some sort of cushioning, and cushioning eventually breaks down. It just does. It compacts, and it just doesn't feel. And then it also presses into you. So, that's not what you want. So, that being said, you don't have to ride on, something that's so hard. And everybody's got their own idea of what's comfortable to sit on.
Right.
So, that's one thing that is very individual. You might get a bike, and it's just like the perfect saddle, and you're good. But it's not at all uncommon for you to find the saddle, type of seat that you like, and then anytime you buy a new bike, that's your new saddle. You just switch, or you buy another one. And unfortunately, with that, it's just hard. There's no way to say that type of saddle is going to fit you. So that's a harder one. Sometimes can get a little bit expensive. There are some options out there. There's some bike companies, the MTB bike company. They'll let you, if you go into a bike shop, they'll let you test their bikes. You put down a.
I'm in the process of doing that now.
So you put down I think it's $20 or $25 fee, which you will lose if you don't buy, but will be applied to your saddle, whichever you buy. And they'll let you use it for as long as you need. Switch out all that, and they'll have usually eight or so different types of saddles, and you can try a different one every day, every week, whatever it takes, till you find the one you want. Their seats range from, on the lower end 40-ish to the higher end 150-ish. So. there's something in there for everyone.
There is. I have to admit, and I'm going to throw a shout out to these guys. Outspoken Bike in Huntington Beach is who I've been dealing with. Small bike shop, great group of guys that work there. I've been testing out the saddles from them for about 5 weeks now.
Uh-huh.
MTB, and there's another company.
There's another company. I can't remember that. I wish I could.
But just like you said, I throw down a deposit. I've had one seat I had for 2.5 weeks, and I was like, I gotta get the seat back.
Right.
They didn't call me. I walked in and they go, do you want to try another one? And so I've pretty much gone through, I've gone through most of the MTBs, and now I'm into this second company, which I think after the first one I've tried it, I'm not really fond of it.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is the ability to test out these saddles before. And the ones I'm testing out are running anywhere from 110 on up. I won't spend the on up because I don't care about the
Again, that's when they start titanium rails, and all that kind of extra stuff. Strong, extra
right.
light.
But
you know,
it's
not necessary.
It's great to be able to test these out.
Yeah.
And really find out what fits and what's comfortable and things like that. Yeah. On several rides.
Yeah.
Too.
And well, that's the thing. So you got to figure out what fits for you. You know, your ass is sore. More times than not, it's because the seat is wrong. It's too soft.
Yeah.
More times than not. Or the wrong shape. Everybody's got a different shape asses,
yeah.
We all know. So you got that's somewhere where you sometimes that can be a little frustrating. As far as pedals go, my thinking on pedals is I own a number of different bikes, and for most of my rides, I'm riding a big, fat, steel pedal with lots of little knobby grips on it, something wide, wide, wide. I have big feet and long.
Yeah.
So that no matter whether I'm wearing, like, my flip-flops or I'm wearing my my hiking shoes, which is what I like to ride in for a lot of these rides, so somewhere for my foot, it's stable, it's flat. If it gets wet, the grips bite. These are great, and everybody's got their own. I don't recommend plastic because they will break, they flex, and they're slippery.
Yeah.
So, and then on the other end of that, are what they, you know, there's the old style clip-ins, you know, with the straps. Again, not really necessary unless you're riding longer distances. And then there's the newfangled, which really aren't new any longer. They've been around for a long time now.
Clipless.
They call them clipless, but you're clicking in.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I own those because I kind of grew up with that culture of racing, and not that I raced, but I was in that, like, racing people. I want to go as fast as possible. And so on one of my bikes, I still wear those, and I have the correct shoes for those, which can be very expensive. And those pedals tend to be more expensive as well. So, but really, again, that gets back to, unless you're a racer or you're really trying to push yourself, these click-ins are really, they've done studies, and they don't make that big a difference unless the most important thing is shaving seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Shaving seconds, then it's important. So unless you're racing, wear something comfortable. You know, wear Tevas. I know people like to ride in their Tevas because then the air flows through there, and they... Personally, they're not comfortable on me, but I've heard of people, you know, they want, like, I like to ride my, if I'm not riding my super fast, go fast bike, I like to ride, in some kind of like all purpose hiking boot that has like the low top. And that way I get off, I can run around with the kids, you know, versatile. Allows me to do everything. I'm not walking around all goofy, click, 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 click.
Yeah.
Again, I reserve those rides for when I'm running all longer distances. And then, you know, some of that efficiency translates. Is it necessary? No. And I wouldn't recommend, especially if you're just starting out, I wouldn't recommend them. They're dangerous. until you learn how to get in and out of them, especially stopping quickly,
yeah.
You know. And you were guaranteed to have some embarrassing moments when
yeah,
you
of
fall
course.
Over. So just, I always recommend people just generally stay away from them. They're really meant for more advanced riders and people with a racer mentality. Don't let them sell that to you.
Right.
A lot of times when you buy a lower end bike, especially, they'll have the kind of cheapy plastic pedals.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if they'll be like too little, they look like, I don't know what they look like. But they're just like U-shaped with little, get something with a flat, broad base, preferably steel. And again, that's somewhere where you might want to spend. The pedals I own cost me about $50. They're like, the bike will fall apart before the pedals fall apart. You don't have. There are cheaper options. Point being is get something flat and stable, preferably not plastic, and grippy. You want it to be really grippy,
right.
Because that's the thing is you're not clipped in, you're not clicked in. That's the one thing you got to worry about. But those are way more comfortable. Allows you to move your feet around, ride in different positions. You know, the click-ins result in a lot of people having knee problems or soreness because they aren't able to flex and move their feet around
right.
as you normally would in any sort of repetitive motion. You would shift and adjust, and that just those little shifts and adjusts result in comfortable knees.
Well, you know what? You had an excellent point. When I had the old look pedals,
mm-hmm.
I could never get my right one adjusted just perfectly, so my right knee was always a little sore.
Yeah.
I do ride the SPD pedals where you click in. right. on my commuter bike. And there's two things I like about those, the ones I have. One side you click in, the other side is like a flat pedal.
Right.
It's got a little grippiness on it.
Yes.
So when I don't, you know, there's times I'm riding around and I'm just tired of being clicked in, so I just flip the pedal.
Yeah.
And I
like that. That's a good system.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
And it's recessed on my shoes, so I can just, I don't have to, on my old shoes, you know, the old click ins, like you're right, you walk around kind of weird with the
all
click
goofy,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are recessed, so it's a little tougher sometimes to get clicked in because it is recessed, but when I'm off the bike, it's usually like a pair of just
walking around
shoes.
Yeah, they just look
shoes.
Like some normal.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, you have some excellent points, and you're right about things. A lot of things. I mean, I didn't go back to when I first went back to click in pedals. I just tipped over two or three times at stop signs.
Yeah.
You know, it's really something you got to be really comfortable with, and you have to be back out riding a lot to get used to doing.
Yeah, and again, the difference in efficiency is really negligible for the recreational rider.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so it boils down to if you're comfortable that way, then ride that way. Otherwise, really, don't.
And you know what? I don't normally, when I'm just riding around town, I'm not clicked in. When I'm going to go on a longer ride, and the reason I do it when I'm on a longer ride, it just keeps me pedaling. It just keeps me, you know, unconsciously. It keeps me pedaling because I'm clicked in. And for me, I find it a little bit better for me to get up hills on. But other than that, at the rate I ride, there ain't no shaving off any time. There's plenty of time to be shaved off. But
yeah.
That's not the plan. You know, you brought up an interesting thing to me a few weeks ago that I really didn't know that it really even mattered. But you said there's a big difference or a big it's very important what type of seat post you have.
Seat post can make a difference. Again, it's one of those subtle things that you start to notice when you start to ride longer distances. The whole bike, basically, the bike vibrates. It gets jarred and all that, and what they call road noise, right? How much road noise you feel there's thousands of variables. How wide are your tires? Are your tires inflated properly? Are they overinflated? Yada, yada, yada. But one of the big determining factors in a lot of this is what type of frame do you have? Are you riding steel or aluminum, carbon fiber? And even from within that, so like I have both. I ride aluminum and steel. I'm not a big carbon fiber fan. I can tell the difference between the different posts. If you have just a straight steel post, just like the simple, there's a term for it, but I forget what it is. But there's a post that's just, no dude, it's just basically it's a tube of steel.
Yeah.
Correctly angled for your seat to fit on it, you're going to feel a lot more road vibration as a rule. It's going to the jarring and all that. And so when you start to think about simple upgrades to make your bike more comfortable, getting a steel or sometimes it's aluminum post that is basically what they do is they've taken this post and they've used a particular kind of steel, and then they've also changed. It's not just a simple round tube. It has inside, it's been grooved and whatnot to do, and it's got shapes inside that basically dissipate the road noise and vibration to some degree. It's not going to make an uncomfortable bike comfortable. But if you're finding, especially, and it's especially noticeable when you start riding longer distances, you will find that if you get these other types of posts, they'll reduce that road shock, that road noise. Combined with a comfortable saddle, you will find a lot, you'll be more comfortable, you'll have a lot less road vibration, and you're likely, and they are designed to flex slightly, so which means when you start driving, they give a little as opposed to driving into you. There's a whole bunch of these out there. They have some of these that are carbon fiber. I wouldn't recommend that just because long term, it's not going to last as long, and they're crazy expensive.
Yeah.
I've seen some where they're starting to put like a suspension system sort of deal, where it's like, I haven't tried them, so I can't say for sure whether that would work, but I suspect that I don't like a mushy feel, and I suspect that would lead to that, but that might be a possibility, especially if you're someone who really is sensitive to that. I could see where that might work. But otherwise, just get one of these nicer and there's a whole bunch of them. I wouldn't even try to tell you which one. Expect to spend somewhere around $100, you know. Most of the time, those tubes are a uniform size. They'll fit any down tube, especially if you're riding aluminum or steel bikes. Mm-hmm. But if you are riding some of the more unusual shapes, sometimes that downpost has an unusual shape or diameter. So you need to make sure that before you buy it, that you've verified the size. And if you take the old seat post in there, there'll always be etched somewhere in it its size. So make sure when you're going, because there's nothing worse than spending $100 to find out, oh, that doesn't fit my seat post, you know. But yeah, about $100. It's one of those upgrades that the novice doesn't really need to be concerned with. But if you reach that point where you're like, I don't have money to get a whole new bike, but I want to make this one better and I want to make it more comfortable, that's a simple way to improve your how the ride feels. Again, it's not going to make you go faster. This is all strictly a comfort thing.
Right.
But it's, you know, for $100, that's cheaper, obviously, than buying a whole brand new bike. And that's a way to go that that combined with a comfortable saddle, you know, can make a big difference.
So, you know, I got a bike and I've got a cool seat post on there, a nice saddle that feels good, but I still feel uncomfortable. How do I know if I've been fitted properly for my bike?
Well, that's another issue altogether, and some of it is just kind of common sense. There's some basic things about your knee as you drive down should not overextend, should not hyperextend, but it also shouldn't be bent. It's actually more painful to have your knee not bending, not going out completely. You know, meaning if your knee is bent when you're driving down, you're probably going to have more knee problems than if you were hyperextending. Because your knee, when you're driving, if it's not completely extending, it just gets really sore. It's all about the angles and stuff. So you want to have that. So when your foot is in the down position on the pedal, it should be slightly bent. You know, you shouldn't be overextended. It shouldn't be locked. It should be slightly bent. And when
where should how do I know if I have the right bike that's the right height? Because I can raise the seat to
right.
correct that.
Well, that's another thing. So sometimes you can correct that. The general rule for kind of standard shaped frames is when you stand over the seat, the top bar, it should just be under your crotch.
So I should be able to stand flat.
You should be able to stand on whatever shoes you're going to wear.
Yeah.
Not on your tippy toes. If you're standing on your tippy toes, you're on a bike that's too big for you. And that is likely to cause you problems because angles are for a bigger person. But you're also likely to have lots of problems on a bike that's too small for you. You'll be more hunched over. You won't get the proper drive in your legs, and so your knees will be sore. So if it's really far under you, then that's a whole other problem. And again, that's a standard. There's so many unusual shaped frames now that it's for that standard sort of shape. So you should be able to put both your feet down. The other thing, too, is very few bikes are designed to have the seat post be more than, say, 4 or 5 inches. Mm. So if your seat post is all the way out, in order for you to sit comfortably and get your knee into that correct position, you are almost certainly riding a bike that is too small. You know, so you'll need to, at some point, consider, you know, getting... by the same token, if your seat post is flat... It's like it's in its lowest position.
Yeah.
And the seat is almost sitting on that. Bike wasn't designed for that either. You're riding a bike too big.
Yeah.
How you move the seat and in relation to the handlebars is another thing. Most handlebars can be adjusted up or down, you know, to some degree. If you're finding that you're getting that kind of pain up in the middle of your back between your shoulder blades, that oftentimes is an indication that your arms are out too far. You know, you need to be leaning forward a little bit more, or the handlebars need to be raised a little bit. And again, everybody's got their own what they can deal with, but that's often a sign that you are out of position. You're riding up too much on a bike that, so either the handlebars need to come back, or perhaps you need to move the seat
forward
closer to the handlebars.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an oddly shaped body in that I'm kind of long in the torso, so like all my bikes, the first thing I do before I get on the bike is I unloosen the seat and push it all the way back, because I have a long back. So I know I'm always feeling like I'm crowding up. So I need to be stretched long. So what works for me is not going to work for everyone else. You got to know what works for you. Most of this stuff you can figure out simply by tinkering with the seat height and the handlebar. But if you're still experiencing lots of pain, it's worth it to bring it into a bike shop and say, hey, look, this is not comfortable. If all you need is simple adjustments, they'll often do it, especially if you go at a time, like don't go on Saturday morning when everyone else just showed up. Yeah. You know, try to get in there when it's a quiet time. They'll oftentimes say, yo, you know what, you might try, change the angle of your seat to, you know, this or that. If you really, really want to have it perfect, you can pay. A lot of times the smaller bike shops will have someone, you know, someone who works there or someone who comes in who will actually size you to the bike. And they'll take measurements about, like, knee angle and measure your crotch and, you know, and all this stuff and figure out the exact... I've never actually done that because, again, I just never need... I was able to figure it out. And that's more of a, again, a racer thing. Like, you need to get into the perfect position. But... the gist of it is, if you're uncomfortable on the bike, first make sure it's the right size, and then start adjusting the seat to get it to where you need to be. That's oftentimes is a big thing. And, you know, like a really good example is seat angle. Generally speaking, the seat should be flat, right? Level.
Right.
You know, parallel to the ground. But everybody, again, this is a little bit different. If some people need that to be up just a little bit, and other people need it to slope down. You know, so if you feel like you're sliding off the back of the bike, just the angle. If you feel like you're sliding forward all the time, you're always pushing yourself back, you know, move the seat forward or adjust the angle, you know, up a little bit. It's not an exact science because nobody's body is exactly the same. And what the other thing too is, as you ride, you'll get better, you get more efficient. You might find that how it was back when was how it needed to be because you weren't flexible, say, to reach.
Right.
Now you've been riding, you're stronger, you're more flexible. You might need to, you know, lower the handlebars or move the seat back or move the seat up, you know. So you also have to be willing to adjust as you get older, as you get better, those sorts of things.
You know, back when we talked cooking and I used to watch a lot of the cooking shows, the one thing they used to say is get to know your butcher, get to know your fishmonger, so you kind of know who you're dealing with, what you're dealing with, and the quality of what you're getting. When it goes to picking out a bike shop, because especially when you're talking about making adjustments for you and making sure you're fit properly and stuff, I mean, how do you know? Because everybody sells bike. I mean, you can buy a bike at Target, you can buy a bike at,
yeah,
you know, here or there. How do you know if you're getting the type of quality information you need?
That can be hard. In some ways, you know, there's a certain amount of faith that's going on there. Best thing to do, I think, is to talk to someone. If you know a friend or someone who's a cyclist or into cycling, start with them. Who do you like? Who do you, you know? If you don't know anybody and you just go in, again, know what you want ahead of time as far as price range and style of bike. That'll help a lot. The one thing, a lot of these smaller bike places, a lot of times they really get into the racer mentality. And if you show up and you're not into that's not your mentality, sometimes you get that sort of like snootiness, like, oh, well, all right, what do you need? You know, we like to deal with the racers, yeah. You know, and if that's the case, I would recommend, unless you're a racer and you're looking for that sort of information, I would recommend going somewhere else. You know, find someone who, when you tell them what you want, they're like, okay, well, I've got these types of bikes, and listen to how they talk to you and, you know, shop around. They're working for your business. So, you know, assuming you live in a large enough area, and we do here in Long Beach, we've got dozens of bikes to choose from. Shop around, you know, see what's out there and ask questions. And one of the things too is when you're doing these sort of shopping type of thing, try to go at the same time on slower days. If you go in there on Saturday, you're going to talk to somebody who's, you know, overworked, harassed, trying to get a whole bunch of shit. That you try to go, if you're talking about buying a bike, I mean, right, if you're just going in to get inner tubes, it don't matter, right? But if you want, try to talk to the shop owner, because that will almost always be the most qualified person, the person with the most knowledge, the person who is has the greatest interest in, you know, making sure you're a repeat customer.
Right.
I know that's not always possible, but that's a, you know, and you'll find you get to talk to those people more often during the slower times, because during the busier times they got a ton of things to do and all that. So, and look at the gear that they're carrying. If all they carry is you know, Lycra, and they don't have baskets and they don't have bells and you know, they're gearing themselves towards a certain clientele. And there's nothing wrong with that, but just know that. And you know, you go in there and they've got, like, you know, they've got stickers and skateboards and, you know, then they're gearing themselves towards that family group, you know. Yeah. That's fine too, so you know who you're dealing with, because they all have their own market.
Right.
Who they're trying to reach. Especially nowadays, you got like bike shops that are just geared towards the fixie crowd. They're selling you cool stuff. You know, they're not necessarily selling you. They're selling you the coolest looking, coolest, neatest stuff. You're going to need to know a little bit more, because what they're going to try to sell you is what looks cool, because
yeah,
that's what their clientele wants.
Yeah.
They don't care if it's, you know, they don't necessarily care about how light it is or how, you know, efficient it is or how long lasting it is. It's a cool factor. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, people ride bikes for all sorts of different reasons. But just kind of have a feel for, you know, what type of bike you want. Try to find the bike shop that sells that type of bike. And you might have to go a few places.
You know, back when I was a kid, stuff, you rode your bike, you know, you jumped off it, it rolled, it crashed, it didn't matter. You know, and you got back on the next day and rode it, you know, and you left it out overnight, whatever.
Yeah.
You can ride. It seems like now, you know, it seems like their bikes are more temperamental. You really have to kind of keep track of the fine tuning of them. Is that true, or is that just
that is true?
My
again,
nostalgic.
Yeah, but that is true when you're riding geared bikes, especially racers.
Yeah.
Bikes that are geared towards the racers again have very small clearances. Very, you know, if cables get just a little stretched out, they're not shifting correctly. They are more temperamental, and you can think of, like, the famous stories of, like, Ferrari, you know. You know, you buy a Ferrari, you're like, it's in the shop more than you're driving it, because everything is so finely tuned that if one little thing's out of place, it's like, boom, nothing's working. And not that the racing bikes are that bad, but they can be temperamental. If you buy the bikes that are geared more towards touring, geared more towards being outdoors, you know, like, in the elements outdoors, as opposed to like racing to and fro, those bikes usually have a lot of leeway. You know, they would go a long way. I mean, you don't ever want to leave a bike out in the rain, out exposed to the elements, because the sun alone will, you know, mess up cables and seats and all that. But if you take good care, I mean, I have a bike, I call it the Beast, and I've owned it for 5 years now, and I've only had it tuned up once.
Yeah.
And it's a bike. It's a touring bike, and it's meant to ride long distances. It comes with saddlebags. Everything's attached to it, and it's meant to be as efficient and as maintenance-free as possible. And like I said, I just, like, 6 months ago, I had it tuned up for the first time in 5 years, and I've literally ridden at least, I would guess, 15,000, 20,000 miles on it. It's not my favorite bike. It's the bike I ride with the family. You know, it's the right, and it never let me down. You know, and I have a racer. You know, love that bike, go fast on it. It's getting a tune-up every 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, it just has to, because if it doesn't, then it doesn't shift properly. And so, again, that goes to know what bike you want. I don't mind owning a bike like that.
Yeah.
Because I like it. I like that. But if you're a commuter, that's the last thing you want, because, you know, on Saturday, you don't want to take your bike in. You probably won't get it back in time to commute on Monday.
Right.
You know, if you take it in on Monday, you're not commuting. You know, so it's like, know what you want. No, get the right bike. All bikes are going to need some amount of maintenance. You know, if you know how to change a tire, grease and clean a chain, you will add years to your bike, and you'll also have fewer problems. And there are some simple things you can learn too, as far as adjusting the derailleurs, because they will go out sometimes. When a derailleur goes out because of the cable's just worn out, because it either got nicked or bent or just stretched out over time, you'll need to replace the cables. I hate doing it, so I'd pay someone to do that. but before it reaches that point, there are parts of the derailleurs, front and rear, that you can look this stuff up online. You know, how to adjust a rear derailleur, a front derailleur. And it literally takes a Phillips head screwdriver and a couple, you know, a little bit of a tweaking here and there to figure out, wow, okay, the cable got short, got tight, and or stretched, either way. So I need to allow the derailleur arm to swing further out, or it's swinging too far out because the cable's not tight enough. And boom. And little things like that can, you know, if you take care of that, it's like, you know, ounce of prevention. Yeah. Saves you a pound of, you know, how's that go? Whatever it is, you know what I'm saying. It's if you take care of these things ahead of time, you don't have to be obsessed about keeping the bike clean. But if you can keep the chain clean, that helps a lot.
You know, things get all gunked up in there. You got to kind of get a toothbrush.
Yeah, if you're up for that, a toothbrush. I use old towels, like old T-shirts. I take the back wheel off, and I just literally rub the like a thin, stretched out piece of the T-shirt in between the gear cogs, and you amaze how much comes out. And then the bike rides new every time you do it. It's a simple, slightly messy task, and it's amazing what a huge difference it makes to the bike.
We're almost out of time, but let's talk about since we're talking about a little maintenance, bike stands. Is that necessary?
Bike stands are not necessary. They're useful, but. And you're talking about, like, the mechanic?
You put your bike on it so you can work on your bike.
There's no reason for them unless you got a lot of bikes, a lot of space, and a lot of money. Because they're not cheap. Well, I happen to own one because at one point I had dozens of bikes I was working on.
At one point?
Yeah. Well, still have quite a few. But it's useful. But, you know, there are ways around it. Like, for instance, one thing I used to do... when I worked on my bikes and I didn't have a stand, is you can hang your bike from the rafters.
Mm-hmm.
Take a loop of rope, throw it over your rafter in your garage, over, you know, like right where that top seat post is. Take another loop, loop it through your handlebars, pull the whole thing up. There it is, man. That's low tech. And there it is. It's hanging in your garage and you work around it. And so you don't need one. Again, it can be fun, and they're a nice little thing to have because you can change the angles just the way you like. But there are so many other ways around it, and so rarely that you actually need your bike suspended. And usually one of the times where that's the most useful is when you're taking off one of the tires, one of the wheels, so that you can, you know, not have to lay the bike down or lean it against something and have the derailleur get bent or something like that. That's probably the best time. But again, hang it from a rafter, tree. You got a tree in the backyard, hang it, you know, from two larger branches. Rope is cheap. Twine.
You're kind of the MacGyver of the two wheels.
I grew up, we didn't have a bunch of money, which is one of the reasons I cycled. It was because, you know, I had to keep that one bike going. And, you learn those little tricks. That's a simple way. After a long ride in the rain, if it's rain, it's even worse if it's not rain, but it's just recently rained, because the moisture sticks to all that road grime, sand and grit and oil. That stuff gets spun up into your drivetrain, your crank, your derailleur. It's especially good if you can, that type of ride, to give everything a nice little wipe down. Especially anything that spins, because that's where you're likely to get rust or grit in there that causes bearings to degrade. Is it vital? No, but it will save you some hardship down the road, because if you get it while it's all greasy and wet already, it wipes off a whole lot easier than when it gets all dry and crusty. And so that's again one of those simple things that if you can, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you end, you just rode home, and now you need to go leave or eat or whatever. But if you can, that's one of those simple ones that will add life, especially to cables. Cables get rusted when the water gets in there, or sweat gets into the cable lining. And if you can just wipe that out, that'll save you cables down the road. And that's cables are, you know, again, I hate even dealing with them. Yeah. They're just a pain in the ass. And so I always pay for someone. And, you know, if you have to have one cable replaced, you might as well have both of them replaced. And that'll cost you usually like $60 right there, oftentimes. You know, once you parts and time and labor and all that. So, simple things like that really, you know, go a long way.
Cool. If anybody wants to get a hold of you or ask you questions on Twitter or whatnot? How do they get they contact you?
Yeah, on Twitter and Facebook. The easiest way is to go to the blog that I keep up with lots of photos and stories about cycling. And that's at pedalgrok.com, pedalgrok.com. And then, of course, you can contact us here through Swoops World, and any of those messages will always get to me as well. And, kind of everything goes from there.
Excellent, excellent. Well, next week on Swoops World Late Night and Primetime, we will not, we'll be down for the holiday week, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Swoops World Late Night on the 28th. Our guest is Halameed. They're a band, local band, and they'll be in the studio with us. And then on Swoops World Primetime, I'm not sure what's scheduled for that day, but either we have a guest or we will be discussing bikes. One of the two. But until then, everybody have a safe, wonderful holiday and enjoyable weekend, and we'll see you back in 2 weeks.
Get on a bike.
Get on the bike and ride! Where's we are right there. Good day, all.
Good day.
The views and opinions expressed by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Story Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.